Harry Potter and the Kaiju Apocalypse. Written by Opal Song as part of Pod Together 2017 and read by Frecklebomb Fic. That Hermione and Luna could agree that the end of the world was coming was probably on its own a symbol of the apocalypse. Hermione had only been 7 or 8 years old when she'd first seen Kaiju on screen, watching the huge mecha battle it out with them, tearing up whole cities along the coast, watching millions of people's homes be destroyed. She knew then that she had to learn to take them apart. But she wasn't sure which of them that meant. Luna knew that there were rumours about her. That she'd come into contact with Kaiju Blue at a young age. That it had changed her somehow. People weren't saying that she could predict the future. But they weren't not saying that either. One single image had become a rallying point for the whole human race. A small child, skinny, young-looking for 7 years old, reaching out to touch a kaiju with his hand. The buildings around him decimated, backlit in stark contrast to the kaiju in front of him. The child himself, Harry Potter, carried a scar on his face from the encounter, and it and he became a fixture in the San Francisco Shatter Dome. His mother, Lily, after so nearly losing her child, knew then that she had to get involved in a meaningful, hands-on way in the efforts to fight the kaiju. She had no single brilliant idea to contribute, but she found people who were already in on the effort and started pitching in. Her partner James and his friends came along too, to provide care for Harry and support Lily in her efforts, they said. She ended up seeing almost as much of his best friend Sirius as she did of him. She felt good knowing James and Harry had someone else there to support them when she was pulling long shifts in the workshops. By the time James and Sirius had qualified to pilot a full Jaeger together, unsimulated, they were up to the Mark II model. Ron grew up in a Shatter Dome. His mum had been working in one as long as he could remember, and his dad had always been involved in coastal protection politics. Fred and George were in training a few years earlier than was strictly permitted, and were on track to be some of the best Jaeger pilots of their age. And Ginny had been fixing Jaeger since she could sneak into one. They knew something was coming. They just had to be ready for it. Harry grew up in the Shatter Domes. General Dumbledore told him that the photo shoots of him playing with his dad and Sirius and living his life inspired people and gave them hope. But he couldn't shake the feeling that he wanted to do something real. He was surrounded by engineers, after all. Lily had been working on the Kaiju Mark III, the first ever. And on its first test run, which she would of course not let anybody else do, she drifted with James. And after that, she wouldn't ever go back. General Dumbledore pleaded with her, citing her engineering expertise and years of service, but that was it for her. She was a pilot. Fred and George loved Jaeger. They were all set to head into robotics before. They worked their way up from the janitorial level, sweeping floors and doing everything they could to help, just to be able to be in the same room as the engineers. They did once have a conversation with Lily about the Mark IVs, which may have been the best thing that ever happened to them. Ginny had her first ever kaiju encounter while on a duty shift. She was 11. She had crawled deep inside a Jaeger, somewhere nobody else could reach, but a recurrent trouble spot. When she saw two eyes reflect the light of her head torch back at her. She swung her wrench at it instinctively, but it wrapped itself around her arms. She was a youngest child by nature, and her first instinct was to hit repeatedly until whatever it was let go, and it served her well. If Molly had had her way, she would never have been allowed back into the engineering lab ever again. Ginny managed to hold her ground, though, and was back on shift the next day. Luna emerged from her lab, pale, half-starved, and raving. She said the alien homeworld was flammable, and all they needed was a nuke to ignite it. Hermione checked her work, said it was sound, but there was no way anyone would agree to give them one. Their defunct, underfunded outpost didn't have the clout to get one, or the resources to build one. Or so they thought. When Fred and George heard the discussion, they exchanged a look, and then beckoned everyone towards their own personal workshop. It seems like their homemade Jaeger was going to get some use after all. The official record of how Luna came to start working at the Jaeger program has been lost to a kaiju attack. There are those who would use that information to support their theory that all kaiju are the product of a secret government research facility deep in the ocean, to keep the population afraid and under control. As soon as James and Lily started piloting together, Sirius went to Remus and begged him to say they could pilot together. There is one telling of it that says he literally interrupted a training session to ask, beg, and, well, it worked. They were often partnered with James and Lily, an effective battle combination. Harry was 12 when he lost both his parents. Thankfully, humanity was in a different place than when he had suddenly become an icon for the survival of the seaboard. There was less demand for him at photo opportunities and speeches, and he was able to turn into the safety of the friends who had become more like family. What he wanted more than anything, now that it seemed possible, was to enter the training program with his friend Ron. But General Dumbledore and Molly both forbade it. They were both too young, they said, and Harry in particular would never be allowed to pilot. By the time Ron had graduated it, the Jaeger program was dying. Fewer and fewer resources and graduates every year. He missed Harry by his side, who all too often, between his own schedule and whatever appearances Harry had booked in, he saw on the TV screen more than in person. He thought maybe he might drift with one of the other boys, but as soon as they got into the ring, Dean and Seamus became Dean and Seamus. He did find a drift partner, though, in Lavender, and the two of them were even eventually assigned their own Jaeger. They worked well together, until they actually went out. It was only because one of them thought quickly, it was impossible to tell who in the moment, that they got to their escape pods in time. It was the last time they ever went out. Hermione tested out of high school the moment she could, and university too. She could have done anything she wanted. The theory was where her heart lay, though. Research. She went for mathematics and quantum physics. What she really wanted was to get to the bottom of where the Kaiju were coming from. She just wanted to understand what was happening down there. Where were they coming from? Why were they coming here? She caught flak for it, but she didn't really care. She just wanted to figure it out. Fred and George had been asked to fight in a Jaeger, but they refused. They drifted together as part of their research, and after drifting together, they had started dreaming together. Dreaming of bright, bright green light and the most intense pain. Of death and destruction. And they refused. They refused, and they knew they would continue to refuse until there was no other option but the end of the world. Luna had a somewhat unsettling habit of calling the Kaiju misunderstood, or just one of life's little mysteries. But then she would go on to talk about the little people who helped her in her lab, or Fae in general, and people would stop listening altogether. It was never quite possible to tell whether Luna was trolling or not. By the time Harry was a teenager, Jaeger programs were almost completely defunded. He was used to giving speeches to entire shatterdomes. He refused to endorse the Wall program, though, which earned him huge amounts of public criticism. He was accused of trying to keep himself relevant, and a relic of a past era. He settled into the same shatterdome as his uncles Sirius and Remus, until Sirius's ill-advised accident caused them both to move inland so he could recuperate. Harry stayed in the Shatterdomes because they were what he knew, and because maybe if he stayed around long enough, they'd let him help in the way he really wanted. After all new Jaeger production was defunded, the twins started working by night. Ginny caught them early on, breaking into a closed-off workshop to salvage parts, and she was a better mechanic than either of them put together, so they let her in on it. They built, as the wall went up along the seaboard, brick by brick. Slowly, their bootleg Jaeger took shape. Before the accident, Sirius and Remus piloted one of the best Jaegers in the fleet. In any fleet. But then Sirius had to go and fall off a skateboard and fracture his spine. Sirius was forced to retire. He was never getting back into a Jaeger again. The twins' fleet, slightly grown since they built their first prototype, was ready. They were finally going to get to pilot their baby. General Dumbledore and Lupin had both come out of retirement and were going to pilot the sole remaining Japanese Jaeger. But when the twins stepped up to open the first ever Newmark Jaeger, their Jaeger, they found it was already occupied. Harry was sitting in it, ready for battle. And next to him, a girl. Chrome. The only pilot to ever have survived her partner dying whilst in drift. She said she could still hear him inside her head. They said they were drift compatible. They said they could do it. Just then somebody shouted that General Dumbledore was having a heart attack. And, well, the breach was opening. They needed all the pilots they could get. Fred and George ran over to the other Jaeger. It looked like they were going to pilot a mecha into battle after all. Just not the one they expected to. Luna pulled off the drift helmet. She had seen an endless network. She understood. She understood them in ways even they didn't understand themselves. And she knew now how to destroy them. The buzzer sounds, and he watches the mecha leave the hangar. He was hesitant when he first met his brothers and sisters, slow to see their gods. But now he is the most pious among them, the most fervent believer. Now is his chance to prove his worth and his devotion. The god killer is lifted from its hangar by helicopters, and hangs there from cables like a convict from the gallows, as it's flown out to its drop point. On the giant screen, he can see the ripples, the vast wake of the god cresting the ocean's surface. He's never seen one so big this close, and has to fight tears back at the grace with which it moves, the power in its enormous flanks. The god killer is upon it in moments, swinging its blade down and around at its momentarily exposed neck. He holds his breath, but the god twists and slithers away. Had it not worked? He thinks. He waits. The god killer wheels around, repositions, and they clash again and again. The heathens around him cheer. Any moment now, he thinks. Then, all his work, his practice and prayer is fruitful. The weapon of the unbelievers falters. Its right knee buckles, the couplings failing under strain as he intended. And it stumbles. The god, divine in its wisdom and awesome in its strength, seizes the chance to wreck it, tearing through it like so much wet tissue paper. He has filled his divine duty. Sacrificed a god killer. Silence falls around him as the huge shattered dome screen cuts away from the wreckage. Are you okay, Peter? Someone asks him, a gentle hand on his shoulder. He raises his head, smiling with too many teeth. He had done it. The twins' original prototype was a one-way trip. A universally, but silently acknowledged fact. That they were now in a different Jaeger meant that the battle strategy had to be changed on the fly. They were now one of the decoys. The three Jaeger were met by three kaiju in open water. Two merely huge, and one colossal. Fred and George extended their sword, and signal to the others to get into position. They needed to take out the biggest one to give Harry and Chrome a chance at their mission. Before they had a chance to move, the twins were cut off from the others by the first snake-like kaiju. Risking a glance over their shoulder, they saw that the smallest Jaeger, their other decoy, was occupied too. But the Goliath was nowhere to be seen. Harry and Chrome plummeted, their jury-rigged suit creaking under the combined strain of water pressure and the enormous kaiju wrapped around its back. They hit the ocean floor softly, and its claws scrabbled around in the dust they kicked up, as they dragged it further and further towards the unmistakable glow of the breach. Just as Luna had described it. All they really had to do was get there. Everyone saw the plume of water erupt on the shattered dome screens, felt the aftershocks come up from the foundations. Fewer and fewer were left to scan the water's surface once it had stilled for signs of their pilots. Three escape pods bobbed to the surface at once, into empty ocean. Fred tore open his exit hatch and swam over to the others. Both pilots from their third Jaeger were safe, and they sent up their rescue flares. But there was no sign of George. Then, there was a shout in the distance, and a single arm waving out of a fourth pod, the hatch dented shut. They levered it open as soon as they reached it to see blood. George, covered in more blood than should be possible for him to still be smiling like that. The last two escape pods appeared after the medical and press helicopters had arrived, after George's severed ear had been seen to, and after hope of finding the two last pilots had almost gone. But what it meant is that everyone saw them climb out, exhausted and relieved. Every camera caught the grief and triumph on their faces, for everything they'd both lost to get here. Parents, drift partners, and friends. Every microphone recorded the first words that Harry spoke, standing on his escape pod and facing the fleet of observers. The apocalypse is cancelled. That was Harry Potter and the Kaiju Apocalypse, written by Opal Song as part of Pod Together 2017, and read by Freckle Bombfic. And now for some reader free talk. This was billed as an experimental writing project based on memory when I signed up to it, which was very exciting, and I didn't know anything about the fandom or content when I signed up. You might have read this when you downloaded the podfic. You may have read the full script, you may have read the transcript for this or others, you may have listened to other versions of this already, but the summary is, I received this in a series of five transmissions which I was allowed to read once, and then had to recreate from memory. Now, the way I personally did this was, I read it once, and then after I read it, I would usually digest it for a couple of hours and then make notes, usually about the sequence of events, the sequence of scenes, and a list of keywords, phrases that stuck out to me, notes on things like which tense to use, because I was paranoid about switching tenses, which I may have done, things like which characters cropped up, any names to use, although I know I've skipped names, because that's a weak point in my memory that I'm aware of, and I thought it would be better to not try and do that than do it badly. Something that changed throughout the transmissions is that I started filling in more information, not from memory. I started adding detail, particularly because the first four transmissions were made up from a larger number of short scenes, and the final transmission was fewer scenes, but very long and quite detail heavy. And I just couldn't remember that much. I reflected on it and tried to absorb it, and I just couldn't remember it. So instead what I did was I took my notebook out and rewrote the scenes, essentially. I tried to keep the chronology of how I remembered the scenes to be, kind of, but I just added in more detail. So I feel like the climactic scene of the whole work is much more detail-heavy than the build-up. But I think that's okay. I haven't edited it yet, so I haven't actually listened back to anything I've done while I'm telling you this. So I hope it sounds okay. But I hope you enjoyed listening. I hope you go and listen to other Podfickers versions. I myself am going to download all of them and listen to all of them because I am so excited about how this is going to turn out, and to listen to how other people have interpreted this writing, and to listen to Opal Song's cleaned up version of the whole thing, because I remember being incredibly excited when I got every single transmission, intimidated about how I was going to remember all of it and record it, but incredibly excited to see where the story was going to go. So thank you for listening. Thank you for getting to the end of this free talk, which is longer than I thought it was going to be, but I'm really excited about this project, and I hope you have a lovely day. No, that's horrendous. Why would you say that? The official record of how Luna came to start working at the Kaiju program. No, Jaeger program. Fuck. Words! By the time Ron graduated the training program... By the time Ron had graduated it, the Kaiju... Oh, fucking... How do I say all this? Fuck. No. With some despising... and some despising... Fuck. This is so hard. Words. I don't have to write like this normally. Oh my god. I just read things off the page. I don't have to do this. Oh my god. Okay. The only pilot to ever to... Fucking... Diction. Just as Luna had described it. Oh, for fuck's sake. Ah. Oh, I have three more pages to read. I'm gonna cry.